Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Voices That Cook. This is your host, William Nunn, who is a voice actor who likes to cook, and I bring people on this show who are voice actors who also like to cook. And this is also going to be my last episode to record for 2021 as of this recording, and I am so thrilled that my last guest for the year is one of the first people I wanted to have on this show that I thought of for this when I was coming up with this, because you've shared so many amazing pictures of food, but you're also extremely awesome and talented. Everyone, Aww. Say hello to my friend, Suling Chan. How are you today?
Hi, everyone. I am really good today. Yeah. Enjoying the holidays.
Oh, yes. It has been... Yes. It's been quite a December, I can say that for sure, for the both of us. And I did want to start out by saying one thing that was a real highlight for me this year was being part of Hounds of Bedlam from Cold Open Stories.
Ooh, yes.
That was not only really fun, but you give such a wonderful performance in that.
Yeah,
it's definitely one of my favorite things I've been a part of so far. And then starting tomorrow, well, at least tomorrow from where I am, I'm guessing for you it'd be like later in the day, we got the Book of Boba Fett coming out, which you got to be yes. Fennec Shand for a little thing I put together a while back.
I'm like, yes. It was awesome.
That was so super fun. I loved your performance in that. So I wanted to give some shout outs for the fact that we got to be in at least a couple of things together for that. And hopefully we can do more in the future, depending on, you know, what happens and such. But I also wanted to mention that another thing that you and I are both in, just off the top of the show, is Batman Athenium.
Oh, yes. I totally forgot about that. It's been a while. I have a memory of a goldfish. I don't remember anything.
All good. I'm hearing that term, well, not that term, that phrase a whole lot more often these days. And I'm just thinking to myself, I wonder what would happen if goldfish heard that and then be like, they'd be like offended for a second and then immediately forget.
Oh, that would be me. That would totally be me. I don't hold grudges against anyone or whatever.
All good. In fact, one thing that I'm definitely very happy about, especially with talking to you here, is just the amazing lineup of work that you've had over. Have you told me before that you've been doing this since like 2012?
Yes.
Voice acting?
So actually, probably longer than that. So I booked my first commercial in 1998. Yeah, I want to say 98.
Oh, wow.
I was in my teens at that time, which also makes me pretty old. I am 37 this year. So Yay. I booked my first commercial in 1998. I was, I think, 14 years old. Yeah. And then, but at that time, I didn't really make a very serious career with it. Because I was still like living in the States and living in Malaysia at that time. And so I booked my first commercial in Malaysia, and like I was going back and forth between the two countries, so it was a little difficult to do those kind of stuff. So and then I finally moved back for a long while, I think in 2008, and then that's when I decided, okay, I want to pursue this pretty like regularly and seriously. And then I think I started really taking it seriously and like in a full-time capacity at around 2012. And that's kind of where I've been. And so I'm pretty established in the Malaysia market. Like, it was only because of the pandemic that when the studios all closed, that's when I had to pursue stuff like remotely, because everything was closed. Yes, everything was closed and everything went remote. And I was like, I don't even know anything about setting up a remote gig. So, and in Malaysia, we had this really strict lockdown where everything was closed. You couldn't, like, the only thing that was open was essentials, which was basically, like, you know, gas station, groceries, hospitals, doctors. Everything else was, like, literally closed, including studios. So this went on for about 4 or 5 months. So I was really bored at home, and I was like, okay, well, e-commerce is still around. So I was going on our version of Amazon called Shopee and Lazada. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I started, like, setting up my own home studio, buying a mic, buying this, learning treatment. Oh, God. Like, the first couple of auditions I sent was so terrible that I don't even want to look back at them.
I don't either.
I was like, oh, my God, what is this? It's like, ugh. So it's been, like, it's been a really crazy year trying to figure things out. And then in the situation in Malaysia is such that, you know, we go into a lockdown, then we come out of a lockdown, we go back in a lockdown. I think that's pretty much it. Like, you know, whichever country you're from, it's always that like tension point between, like, overfilling the hospitals and balancing, like, you know, economic activities so the country can function. So right now, the last 2 months, it's kind of been all, like, open, like, totally open. If you've been double vaxxed, you can literally go anywhere and do anything, kind of. So I have been so busy these, like, past 2 months that I've probably worked more in the past 2 months than I did for the entire year when we were in lockdown. So it's been crazy. But yeah, I'm sorry, I ramble all the time. So you need to tell me.
You're good. I love the fact that you get to ramble. That's very fun to hear. And also, I'm just very happy with the success that you've had and the work that you've done. In fact, speaking of successes, I would feel very remiss if I did not bring up that you actually got to be the first Malaysian voice actor to be in an American dub.
That
is truly incredible news. When I saw that, I'm sure every single one of our mutual friends was like, yes, just wanting to celebrate with you. And what was it like being able to legit make history?
It was pretty cool, I guess. So I've been auditioning for Sound Cadence for a while, and I just, like, didn't get any hits in terms of casting. And, well, to be honest, I still don't get a lot of hits. I still regularly audition for them, but I don't really get cast in anything. Well, I guess I just need to work more on my craft. And I was very surprised when I got an email from Sound Cadence saying that, hey, we would like you to come in for additional voices. And I was half expecting it to be like, oh, yeah, voila, girl one, student two, those kind of things. But I was very surprised that they gave me a named role. Well, technically, she's Akia's mom. So, I mean, okay, she has a name. At least my name is in the credits somewhere rather than additional voices. So I was really surprised with that. Because I was, like, thinking, man, all my auditions kind of suck. And then I realized, okay, I guess my auditions don't suck that bad. This would have happened. So, and a lot of people don't realize it, but it took, like, a bloody year for it to happen to get, like, how I got on Sound Cadence's roster was Marissa Lenti was looking for demos from people who were bi or trilingual and did dubs in other languages. So I also do dubbing in from English to Malay and Malay to English, vice versa. So I dub in two languages, like, natively. So so I sent what I've done before. Like, I've done, like, a Shaolin Showdown where I'm Omi, I'm Gumball's sister, the pink girl, in that Disney, is it Disney? Yeah, or is it Cartoon Network? I don't know, whatever, Gumball. Yeah, the pink girl, whatever. And I'm in, like, Cardcaptor Sakura and Chibi Margo in Malay and all this other stuff. So I sent all these clips to her, and she's like, oh, that's great. Yeah, just this is the Sound Cadence roster sign up. Just say that I want you in and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay. And then it took like 5 months to even get any auditions from them. So I was like, oh, yeah, I know. I thought like I messed up. And I was like, okay. But then eventually I got my first email from Sound Cadence. I think in April, I submitted to the roster in September, and then my first email from them was in April. And then I started regularly getting auditions from them. And then eventually, Kageki Shoujo happened in all the way in September. So when people say that this is a long game, it is a long game.
Yes.
It took me like a year to even get to where I needed to be to book that role. So, well, we'll see what happens in the future. Now I'm hoping to get on a lot more rosters, hopefully, and do more anime dubbing.
Oh, yes. It would be cool to see more shows with you on there. In fact, I think that's become one of my new favorite ways of getting into anime that I probably wouldn't have initially wanted to check out initially until I find out that, oh, my friend is in this. And that's kind of what happened with Horimiya and Shadow's House, where I knew some of the people that were involved, and it just made me not only feel more appreciative of the work that's put into a dub in general, but it was also a great way of just seeing how someone can do something like that in that circumstance. Because it's something that I haven't done very much as far as just, you know, trying out dubbing for the sake of just seeing how it would work and how it would go. And I've had multiple people on the show that have told me about their dubbing experience. And I was wondering with your experience, is it all pretty much kind of the same as far as how it's usually handled, depending on what language you're using or anything like that? Is it always just the same format?
Okay, so it's very interesting. I started and, I guess I can talk about it. I started doing live action dubbing in English for a studio, and I was like, ooh. So it was my first time doing live action. I think when you talk about animation, there's not much difference between anime and animation per se, because I dub both Malaysian animation, Korean animation, I've done Chinese, and I've done anime, you know. And when it comes to animation, frankly speaking, it's pretty much the same. The cadence of the language, of course, differs. So, but the good thing about it is that Asian languages have a very similar cadence in a way. So when you're dubbing in Mandarin or Korean or Japanese, it has the same feeling. Caveat, I do speak basic Japanese. I'm learning Mandarin at the moment, and I watch enough K-drama to figure out like things in Korean. So I know where to place things when I hear the language. But then I started recently doing live action dubbing in Spanish, and holy crap, that is a new ballgame. First of all, I failed Spanish when I was in high school because I can speak like supposedly the most difficult language in the world, which is like Chinese. I speak Cantonese, and I can't even master Spanish, because to me it was quite tough, or maybe I just didn't study it. So now I'm doing dubbing in Spanish. I lose my place all the time because I can't figure out where the sentence ends and where the sentence begins, because people, when they talk in Spanish, especially from Latin American countries, they're like, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't figure this out. And when it comes to live action, it's humans, you know, the mouth flaps aren't obvious at all, because it's a movie. And like, there's a scene with like five girls, and I'm playing a girl, and I'm like, okay, who am I? I can't even tell who am I. I can't even see, I can't even match the mouth flaps, because it's like from a long distance, and sometimes it's very difficult to figure out where you're at. So I would have to say, so far, live action dubbing is, to me, at least this experience, it's more challenging than animation/anime dubbing. I don't know how other people feel about it, but you know, I've had like 12 years of experience doing animation dubbing. And I thought I was going to be fairly confident doing live action. Oh, boy. It's difficult.
With anime, I can imagine it being easier than live action, where there's very specific animations for lip flaps. There's usually maybe about three or five different ways the mouth is moving within a normal conversation. Whereas with live action, there's a lot of ways the vowels and certain words can change. I'm even trying to picture how my mouth is currently moving right now. And if you were trying to dub it, it would be, especially if we're not fully enunciating or doing the major inflections, that's going to be very interesting to try to figure out, where do I come into all of this? And it's almost like you might want to put the audio in slow motion to figure out where can I start right at this moment and see how long it takes to go. And did you ever end up finding something that helped you to make that process a bit smoother or easier for you?
Okay. So the biggest tip that I learned is that, okay, so here's the thing that differs from my work here locally than in the US. In the US, the scripts are pretty tight. Like, punctuation is really important. So when it comes to ADR, follow the punctuation, because it gives the engineer room to place things properly. If you don't follow the punctuation, he can't do anything. He can't, like, time shift things. He can't move your he can't cut your block of text around and move it to fit. Okay. In Malaysia, our scripts are just, because, like, we have to do things at a super fast pace. So I in fact, tomorrow is my last dubbing session, probably my last session for the year, where we had to dub 26 episodes in six weeks. 26 episodes in 6 weeks.
Oh, my.
That's the speed that we're working at. So we're really used to this speed, which is why I don't really do a lot of dubbing anymore, unless it's for old roles or things that I'm really passionate about, because the pay is just not worth it and stuff like that. So the speed, the pacing here is really, really fast. The scripts that come out are just not very good. Like, punctuation, what's that? And we're like, oh my goodness, the English here sounds terrible. The Malay here sounds really strange. So it's like, half the time it's like me and the director trying to rewrite the script to match the mouth flaps better or things like that. But I noticed, at least in my very limited experience dubbing for US American studios, the script's always pretty tight. I'm like, oh wow, I wish that the script was like this all the time locally, but it's not. So the script's very tight and the punctuation is exact. Like, it really, like, for example, if you were to say, like, hey, how's it going? Where's Matt? You know, there's that pause. Like, hey, how's it going? Where's Matt? You know, and then there's that dot in the script, it really is the character saying like that. So you can't, when you record it, you can't say like, hey, how's it going? Where's Matt? You can't, because the engineer can cut it. So when you see those dots, you got to be like, hey, how's it going? Where's Matt? I mean, it sounds like a duh thing, like follow the punctuation. But I guess coming from a market where our scripts are not, you know, not that, what's the word for it? I don't want to say good, but, you know, not that accurate. I guess that's a better word. It's not that accurate. It just, and, you know, like, punctuation there is almost like a guideline and not like a hard rule. But in America, the scripts are very well crafted and well formulated, and it's easy, and the performer just has to follow the script. So yes. I was like, oh, wow. Okay, so when the punctuation really says, like, ... full, that's like a pause. A comma is just a breath. So, yeah, those things, like, really matter. I mean, like, someone who's listening to this is like, what the hell, Sue? That's, like, basic ADR. And I'm like, yeah, but you'd be surprised how other markets do it.
I completely understand that. I completely understand that, especially when there's even as someone who writes scripts a pretty constant basis these days, whenever I do the dot, 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 I keep imagining it being a pause, not just something that you can kind of just completely run over. Obviously, you're welcome to do a take, and if you were auditioning for it, for whatever purpose, if it's allowed. But if you're in there doing it, I would almost at least want to make sure that that first take is going to be exactly what the script needs it to be. And if everyone's cool with it, yay. And if not, you can try again, try a different way if need be. But with a dub, I'm sure you need to be as precise as possible to make sure it's going to match with what the character is saying and how the mouth is moving, while also conveying the action and tone of what's going on in the moment, all at the same time.
So yeah,
those rules are very important to follow, and I completely respect that.
Yeah. So that was like, okay, that was something that I mean, it's not to say I don't do it here, but it's just something that I'm not like, you know, super anal about. But now that I'm working with American studios, I'm like, okay, punctuation, follow it to the T. So yeah, but that was, you know, it's something really quick to adapt to. It's not a big thing. Well, what I do have a strength in is that because we work on a super tight timeline here, we don't have beeps. In Malaysia, we don't use the beep. So I've never heard of the beep thing until I was taking an ADR class just to see what the difference was with American ADR. This was before I started booking ADR jobs. And I was introduced to the beep thing, and I was like, wow, okay. I wish they did it here. It would make things easier, but I guess they don't, because it takes time to place the beeps. So I noticed in the ADR class, like, you know, we place the line, and then we go back and we listen to it and all that kind of jazz. But because things are really fast here, we just go in without the beeps. And then, like, sometimes the director, like, during the practice, like, usually you would hear it first and then go in. But because time is important here, we don't do that. We just go in and record it anyway. And if it comes out fine the first time, we keep that take. And if it doesn't, then we go and redo it with the second take. So it's almost like you're using the practice, and the director's just hoping that, oh, okay, if the practice one sounds great, maybe we can use it. Most times it does. Sometimes it doesn't. And then you go in for a second or a third take. So that really, what's the word for it? Simplifies the, like, you know, it makes, it cuts the time by half. Because you're expecting actors to deliver the things in their practice. Obviously, sometimes it doesn't work out because you don't know the context of the scene at all. All you have is the script and what the person says before. And then you perform it like totally wrong because you've never seen it. Sometimes it works out because it's easy to figure out what emotion you need based on what the script is saying. And yeah, so then the engineer was saying like, oh yeah, we don't use beeps in our studio, but we're working with a talent who was only used to dubbing with beeps. And yeah, it was a little challenging for her. And he's like, yeah, but I'm glad you don't use beeps. And I'm like, yeah. And so sometimes like, in Malaysia, we would dub in a chunk. So we don't do it line by line. So we just continue going on, and then we end it like in chunks. So because time is money. So I'm really used to dubbing in chunks. And so like when I was doing that live action dub, the engineer was like, oh, you do chunking, like you dub in chunks. Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Some of our actors do that too. Okay. I'll keep that in mind. So we started dubbing in chunks. So I guess those are my strengths. I can come in without the beeps because I'm used to that. And I can dub in chunks because I'm also used to that. I'm plugging myself. But yeah, those are my ADR strengths.
Hire her. Hire her. Everyone hire Sue.
Because of how our market is, you know, and like we don't do it line by line. We do it in chunks. So if there's like five lines that come in consecutively, we would just dub it five lines, those five lines straight. Yeah.
That's a pretty reasonable way to do it. And it also can allow you to still feel in rhythm with the scene as you're going through it, which I feel like I almost need to go through some of my auditions that way too, where rather than just kind of think line by line and then and just to kind of handle it like chunks, since it usually is a chunk to go through. But then again, not the same thing that you're dealing with, because it also just makes you can keep more things consistent with how they're going. Like if you have a whole conversation that's just within those five lines that are on your end, then it's like, okay, we got that part taken care of pretty reasonably. But on top of that, this will probably be my last question involving dubbing. Was there ever a happy accident that happened with a dub and they were just like, no, we'll keep that. That was great.
I don't know, because you don't really have a lot of freedom with dubs. I mean, I won't say there's accidents. Like, whatever you're performing is almost expected. It's really hard to do something unexpected because the source material is there. So, I mean, some stuff that's like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. We can keep that expression. I think there's more freedom in expression than...
Expression, okay.
Expression.
We can't talk. We're voice actors.
I know. With expression, like, you know, huh, yeah, this, because they're nonverbals, you know, and if there's an interesting way to do it, then yeah, I guess that would be where, at least in my experience, where the happy accidents come out. It's really hard to have any accidents with lines because, yeah, sometimes you could change a line to make it sound better. I guess that would be a happy accident. I can't remember for myself personally when that happens because I don't remember my sessions, but I don't know if, okay, I think this might have happened in recording, but I started watching The Silent Sea on Netflix. It's a Korean show. So I watched it in Korean first, and now I'm rewatching it in English because I really like that show. If you're into stuff like Interstellar, sci-fi, horror, you'd really like the show. Like Aliens, Interstellar, Sunshine, Ad Astra.
Oh, you got me. Really, I do love Interstellar and Aliens, but Sunshine, I have a very soft spot for that.
I love Sunshine. So you'd definitely like Silent Sea. So there's this one, oh my gosh, I'm going to spoil it for everybody, but never mind.
If you want to, full
spoilers. Okay, it's not really a spoiler. Okay, no context, but it's just the lines. So like when you know in Netflix, you have the CC version, which is basically the dub script. And kudos to the actor who played this character. If I don't mention the character, it's not really a huge spoiler. So basically, this character says, you can't stay here. You can't stay here. And the character repeats it again. You can't stay here. In the Korean, it literally means you can't stay here. But this actor in the second line changed you can't die here in the second line. And I was like, oh my God, that was so powerful. Because in the first line, this character says, you can't stay here. And then this character repeats in the Korean, it is repeated. So the meaning is the exact same words. But in the English, the actor changed the second line because they're consecutive. So it's like, you can't stay here, pause, you can't stay here. In English, the dub, you can't stay here, pause, you can't die here. I was like, wow. That was probably ad-libbed because in the CC, it is still translated as you can't stay here. So I think the actor changed stay to die for the second sentence. Because if it was in the script, at least from what I know, the closed caption subtitles would have changed that. It would have been you can't die here. You know what I mean? Because if I remember the closed caption subtitles is based on the dubbing script. So basically, this probably happened in session. And then they forgot to tell Netflix that they changed that. And that's why the subtitles still come out as "You Can't Stay Here." So I'm pretty sure that happened in a session. And I was like, man.
That makes a lot of sense as far as subtitle inconsistencies that I have noticed in some shows.
Right? Yeah, because it probably what happened was the director and the dub actor changed it during the session. Because, you know, you would get really into it and stuff like that. But that was like the most powerful change that I've ever seen. And it just changes the whole meaning of that scene so powerfully, because it's like, you can't stay here. And then the character goes, you can't die here. I was like, oh, that's so good. But it's like goosebumps, you know, that kind of level.
I am really looking forward to seeing that scene whenever it happens, because I have now just added it to my Netflix list of things to watch. I may have to try to watch that in January, since that's only 8 episodes.
Yeah.
So that should be, I say that should be reasonable, but I'm also the same guy who said, oh, I will totally watch Squid Game, and I've only seen 1 episode. Mm-hmm. I do need to finish that show, and I still have other shows I need to get caught up on. But you had me at Sunshine, so I feel a lot more eager to go through that, probably after I finish the new season of Cobra Kai. But
when is that coming out?
Friday.
Okay.
But as far as other wonderful things in this world that exist that I can't wait to talk to you about, let me rephrase that. When did you get started in cooking?
A really long time ago. So I've been cooking since probably earlier than I've been doing voice acting.
What was the first meal that you made that you were proud of?
I don't remember. Cupcakes. I made cupcakes when I was a little kid.
Ooh.
Like I was 9 or 10 years old. And my mom hates cooking, so I didn't learn anything from her. Like, she hates cooking. You know, so I learned cupcakes. I picked up a book, and I just was like, oh, these cupcakes look really good. Chocolate cupcakes. I still remember the frosting was a little difficult for me at 9 years old. Mm-hmm. So I didn't make the frosting. It took me like 2 years to finally learn how to make frosting, but I made the cupcakes.
Nice. I have yet to make my own cupcakes. mainly out of the concern that I would probably overeat them after a while. But then again, I have finally gone down the rabbit hole of wanting to make my own pizza crusts, and I've mainly done Roman pizzas, and that was a great experience to try it the first time, and then the second time it ended up going the way I wanted it to. That was more like how I had seen from videos and other recipes. But then this most recent one I did for my brother while he was visiting for Christmas, I learned a very hard lesson as far as baking or handling anything that turns something into bread of some sort, or a dough, I should say. You need to be very, very much in mind of the humidity of where you are making your dough.
Oh, because that was...
That was not how it should have gone down. Like, it should have been probably warmer. It shouldn't have been as chilly downstairs when I was doing it. And I was also trying to make sure it would fit within a schedule that would go along with the busy Christmas week and everything. And when I saw that the dough was turning more into like a giant biscuit than something along the lines of what I had experienced the second time, I should have scrapped what I had put together and either tried with new bread flour that I had gotten, or maybe try to figure out what went wrong. And after really eating it and seeing how it was once I finished everything, which luckily my brother enjoyed, but I could tell there was something off. And that just made me go, okay, lesson learned. Keep the humidity of your kitchen in mind when you're putting something like this together. And I felt a little sad, but at least I learned something and I won't make that mistake again.
Was it because it was too humid or not or too, not enough humidity?
Not enough humidity. It was pretty late. It was pretty late in the night, like around 10 p.m. somewhere around there when I was making it.
Okay.
And of course, to add insult to injury, going through that whole dough process, and then after it was all situated to where it could go in the fridge and be in there overnight, I ended up watching the new Matrix and wasn't too happy with it. So I was kind of down. I was kind of down for that night.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Like in Malaysia, it's always like 80 to 90% humidity. So there's a lot of, there's humidity controlled kitchens. So you can make stuff like croissants and things like that because of the heat and humidity. So I get it. We're really mindful of it here. Like, for example, I would never be able to make a croissant in my kitchen because it would die. It wouldn't come together because the heat and humidity would just kill it. With bread, it's not that bad because the yeast gets to grow, but then there's over fermentation, so you just have to watch out for that. And sometimes the dough can get really sticky, so then you'll just need to use more flour. But other than that, yeah. But I get what you mean. Humidity and heat really plays a role in baking bread.
Most certainly. Now, there are a lot of recipes I have done throughout this year that I'm very happy about, but there are two that I have not done that I really want to try to do in 2022. I feel like I could probably actually put these off. These are two that you have actually recommended to me in the past. Banana fritters and Penang fried flat noodles.
Oh my God. And you know what is the funniest thing? I've never even baked those. I've never even cooked those things.
You've told me about them. You've told me about them. And I'm like, I have to try them.
First of all, they're easy to get. Like the banana fritters, there's like literally one down my house. I can walk there in like 7 minutes to get banana fritters every day. The Penang flat rice noodles, which locally we call Chakwitiao is like super difficult. Oh my God. It's like if I had to give like it's 10 out of 10 in terms of difficulty. So good luck with that. I've never in my entire life even attempted to make Chakwitiao on my own. But good luck. I would say the banana fritters is a lot easier. I've made banana fritters before. It takes a lot of work. And I'm like, why am I doing this when I can get really good banana fritters like 7 minutes from where I am by foot? So
yeah,
I don't personally do that. But I suppose if I lived abroad and I couldn't get banana fritters, I would totally do it, you know, but I don't. So lucky thing. But yes, good luck with the char kway teow. Oh my God, the char kway teow is going to be so, I'm just like,
I really want to make all sorts of different foods like that. And I also really want to try making my own Korean food too, and also try to make, I made mozzarella sticks already, so I've got that crossed off my list. Mm-hmm. And then there's, there's a bunch of casseroles I want to try. I want to actually make my own hash brown casserole. That's what I really want to do.
That's really good.
I got to have one during Christmas that someone who works at a local place made and put in the freezer. And I'm so glad I was kind of in charge with how that was handled as it was in the oven, because my mom likes to usually rush with cooking. My dad likes to make sure everything is overcooked and dry, and I like to make sure there's a balance. So the thing with the hash browns was like, okay, they've been frozen for a while. They need to cook for a while too, but also, of course, take off the aluminum foil and don't even take them out until they start to look like they are really browning up top.
Yep.
And you know that they are what they need to be when you cut it into a third and it looks like a fucking pie. It looks like a pie of cheesy potatoes. It is the most beautiful thing. I saw that Christmas outside of my Art and Soul of Dune book that my brother got from me. Mm-hmm. It was delicious. We still have some of it left over as of this recording, and hopefully I can eat some of that tomorrow. I also want to make my own salsa because I love chips and salsa.
I made salsa the other day only because of I had no choice. You can't get salsa here. So I made my own salsa. I made two. I made pico de gallo, which technically is a fresh salsa. And I made roasted tomato salsa.
Oh, nice. What all did you use for your salsa?
I mean, for the roasted tomatoes, I just had like roasted vegetables like tomatoes, chili peppers, sweet peppers, garlic, onions, and I just blended that shit, and that was my salsa. And then pico de gallo is the usual, like, you know, onion, white onion, garlic, tomato, cilantro, that kind of stuff.
I really like cilantro, so that does please me.
I love cilantro too.
It is very good. And for anyone who doesn't like cilantro, this is why parsley exists. at least that's my feelings on it. Because I know my mom is allergic to cilantro, unfortunately, but she does like parsley at least. So whenever I make birria tacos or anything, I have to make sure it's parsley if she's going to eat any. And if it's just me, I'll do cilantro, which I will say birria tacos were probably my favorite meal that I have made in 2021.
Oh, yes. You need to give me the recipe because I want to make birria tacos.
I will gladly send you that recipe. I have technically said the recipe on the show probably a couple of times already now, so I won't repeat it for the audience, but I will gladly send you my notes on it.
Yes, please.
Because it is a hassle to make sometimes, but it is worth it in the end. And if you have someone helping you, that's definitely a plus. I got to visit Kelsey Mayer and she helped me make the birria tacos in her kitchen. And it was so much easier having a second pair of hands to help with dicing the chilies and doing everything else with making sure it all just went smoothly. So if you can have help, it's worth it, and the both of you can enjoy the most mouth-watering, gorgeous, lovely tacos you have ever had, and do your best not to cry as you eat them. just don't make the mistake of what I did at her place, where I was like, "Oh, they're not being all tender and falling apart yet. Let me turn the heat up." No, no, no. Don't do that. Don't do that.
No, just slow let them roast just it, right?
Slow roast it, please. Yes, because then it just made them like really thick. Still good. It just made the process of finishing them off probably take about the same amount of time it would have taken if I would have just let them sit and roast slowly, which, I mean, if I would have known what was going to happen a few hours later, I would have just let them sit and roast, but we thought someone else was going to show up and join us at a particular time, and I wanted to make sure it was all ready by then. I was like, nope, they're not coming. Ah, well, never mind. So we could have literally continued watching Star Wars Visions all the way to the end, and then they would have been like, fine. Oh, here we go. We are all good. We are all content, and I still want a sequel to The Ninth Jedi. So that was all good there. And the fact that the fact that I got to actually make food for voice actors in person and they loved it did feel very validating to me. So I was, if there's any like high point in my year, I would say that would probably be it, or one of them for sure. Did you have any 2021 highlights as far as cooking for you this year?
Oh, yeah. So I managed to figure out how to make melts in your mouth chashu, which is pretty difficult. And like, you know, a lot of people can make suyo. So suyo is the Chinese roasted pork, which is crispy on the outside. Like suyo is child's play compared to chashu. So chashu is like really challenging and there's so much technique that goes into it. I finally managed to figure out the technique. I was watching this YouTuber called, I think, Food Ranger. He was stuck in Malaysia for a while. I think he's gone from the country. So before the lockdown happened, he was visiting and then he got stuck during the lockdown and he decided to just stay in Malaysia the entire time the country was in a lockdown. Because as of now, no international tourists are allowed to come into the country. Like, still, no. So once, if you're international and you leave the country, you can't come back unless you have a permanent visa, like a work visa or a PR or whatever. Like, tourists are not allowed. So Food Ranger is obviously a tourist because he's a freelancer. He doesn't have a work visa or anything. So he came in and he started making like his show all over Malaysia because he was stuck here during the lockdown. So he went to this very famous Chinese roasted stall, and the guy was taking through him all the things that he does to prepare the roast. And then I was watching that show and I was like, I noticed something. And okay, so this is getting a little technical, but basically when the term ta is basically roast. It's not roast. What am I talking about? Siu is roast. Yeah, right? So the name is like China, it's saying that it's to roast it. Well, that's only one part of it. You still have to braise it. Although braise is not the actual term. In Cantonese cooking, there is this thing called man. So man is like to braise it over a really slow fire with enough liquid that covers it. So the missing step that I had to making like super mouth, like melts in your mouth texture, is the man it before you roast it. So a lot of home cooks, they just go and roast it, and then it just ends up really hard on the outside, without having that bitiness, like this soft texture. So when I watch Food Ranger, I noticed that the guy he man the chashu first before he roasted. So I was like, you can totally see it like he's braising it in a metal container in the oven. And I was like, oh, so that's what I'm missing. Yeah. So that was kind of what I was missing.
That's really amazing. Was there ever, let me rephrase that. Of course, I hum the Final Fantasy victory theme when I don't have a victory for this conversation. But I guess what I was gonna probably ask after you had told me that story was, which by the way, I really want to try that myself at some point.
It's probably easier than cha kway teow, I can tell you that.
Would you say that was probably your favorite thing that you have made, or do you have another favorite recipe?
Yeah, that definitely is my favorite thing to make, because I get to make the chashu the way I like to eat the chashu.
And I guess really, if I were to have one more question for you, is there any other recipe that you want to do more than any other in 2022?
Maybe birria tacos? Is that how you pronounce it?
Birria
tacos. I really want to make, and I'm probably going to do it sooner than later because I have some leftover tortilla skins. I don't know. Or tortilla. It's not shells. I don't
shells?
Know. The tortilla thingy.
Do you have flour or corn tortillas?
It's flour. You can't get corn tortillas here. So I have leftover tortillas from Christmas. So I need to use that real quick. So I'm probably going to make it next weekend then. Because I need to use these tortillas pretty quick.
I will say that's very good to do with flour tortillas, especially for your first time, because corn mm-hmm. tortillas I find to be very weird to make with sometimes, even though I do prefer them flavor-wise. But flour, yeah. there's less chance of a flour tortilla screwing up on you or getting too sticky with oil or anything else that you're... Because you will be dunking those shells in your broth that will be marinating with everything, which, oh my gosh, it really adds to it. So I will send you my recipe right after we finish. But before we finish, I did want to say it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show, Sue. Thank you so much for being on here.
Thanks for having me.
It was so fun to learn more about dubbing from you and to talk food with you and everything else. And I look forward to seeing more of what you've got going on later on. And for any of you who have listened that want to see more of what Sue has, because, I mean, you share great food pictures all the time. You've got gigs you've got coming out that you've announced that I'm so excited to see more of. Where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter. And yeah, that's the only social media that I update on a public level. Like, I have a Instagram and a Facebook, but I'm hardly on Facebook. And Facebook, yeah, it's dying anyway. And I hardly update my Instagram either because I'm not a very visual person per se. In regards to, like, I don't like taking pictures of myself and all that stuff. So I'm just on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. I don't really post a lot of voice stuff. Sometimes I do. What I post most of the time is just food. So
yes,
come for the voice acting, but stay for the food, I guess.
There you go. And if you want to come for the food and stay for the voice acting on my end too, you're welcome to follow me on Instagram at The Voice That Cooks and on Twitter at Voice That Cooks.
Yeah.
And I really have to say that I've made so many podcasts this year. I've made so many for One Shot's D&D Character Podcast and now with Voices That Cook, and just to close out 2021 with you has been an honor and a really fun one. So I'm very pleased with how this turned out. And I hope all of you listening, y'all got to not only enjoy this episode, but hopefully we made your tummies growl and you may want to make your own food like this yourselves. And if you do, please do let us see them. I'd love to see what y'all come up with and create. If you're listening to this on an app that lets you review the show, leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. And that's really about it. I'm going to be still auditioning, still editing, still playing Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, and waiting for Dune to come out on Blu-ray. So,
oh, I haven't watched Dune. Dune. I need to do it.
Please do. I've seen it 9 times already. I love it so much.
Oh my god. I have not. I missed it in the cinemas, but I guess I have no choice now. I have to watch it at home. So, we'll see. I'm just waiting for it to come out legally somewhere. Legally to me.
Yes. Because I'm hoping it will be soon, because it's going to be like January 11th for me. And it came out in Europe first. So I'm hoping that because of the so soon Blu-ray drop, at least for me, because it came out in theaters in October and then just a few months later, January. So I'm hoping it's coming to you very soon. And if not around the same time, but maybe sometime shortly after, I don't know. I don't know mm-hmm. how it's going to drop over there. But When you do see it, immediately message me because I want to know, because I've loved the reaction that the movie has gotten from people I know who are either already Dune fans or they've never experienced it before and now they understand why I love the series
so much.
Oh, yeah.
I've never experienced it before, so I haven't read the books. I didn't watch the first movie. I don't know anything about it except it looks really cool. So, yeah, I guess I'm a Dune virgin.
You will be very much entranced by the experience, and you will, if you do end up deciding to read the book, you'll definitely go, oh, I see where George Lucas, quote unquote, borrowed some stuff.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, there's definitely, Dune was definitely a major influence on Star Wars, especially the first film.
Yeah, it looks kind of similar with the sand dunes and things like that. Yeah.
Pretty certain the sandworms inspired the Sarlacc
pit. Yes, for sure.
Especially if you watch the unaltered version of Return of the Jedi and it's just like a circle with teeth. That just looks
You're
like a sandworm.
Hey, this sandworm. Yeah, for sure.
Good old Shai Hulud trying to swallow Boba Fett, and clearly that didn't work because we get to see him tomorrow.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm
survives.
Excited.
I don't know how.
I know.
He does.
I kind of hope they'll, if there's one thing I hope they do with the show, I kind of hope they explain that. I would like to at least know that there was something involved with how he got out.
Yeah, they just said that the star just spat him out. He had.
He could have had like gadgets in his armor that made him, you know, be able to get himself out because he's Boba Fett.
Yeah.
I don't know. He clearly didn't use those gadgets on Luke Skywalker, but he can use them on a Sarlacc. I'll forgive Robert Rodriguez, John Favreau, and Dave Filoni if they're like, oh, he used something else entirely to get himself out of the suit that you didn't see in Return of the Jedi. It's like, that's fine.
Because
I didn't know he had like that knee rocket thing and then found out later that like that was part of his armor design back in like Empire or Return of the Jedi, where it was like that was something he was going to use and they never used it in the movie. And then he finally uses it in The Mandalorian. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. Huh. They're actually referencing something that was from like a really old design that just never got used. So if something like that happens with how he gets out of the Sarlacc pit, cool.
Cool.
But I'm also trying to not keep my expectations up because I just want to enjoy the show as is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I feel like would be of like, I hope so sort of mindset with the show, because otherwise I just want to see Boba Fett do shit and Fennec Shand with him.
To watch it.
Alrighty then. Before I start to go into major deep dives of Star Wars, I'm going to stop myself and just say to everyone, thank you so much for listening to Voices That Cook, and I hope you all have a wonderful 2022. Good night.
Yes. I hope you have a wonderful 2022 and hope it treats us all better than 2021.
Exactly. All right, yeah. For real. Bye, everyone.